CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. We are live and taking you through your Tuesday. Tuesday, the 8th of June. It's dark outside. Don't even bother. Don't even look. Don't even try to feel. If you are already in the car or in the train or in the taxi or in the bus or whatever it is that you're taking to wherever you're going this morning, just, you know what, grin and bear it. There's worse stuff. Humans have been through more cold than this. I mean, you know, we'll make it. We'll be fine. Don't panic. We're so soft.
And that's the weather report.
That's the weather report for this morning. We seem to start the show with the weather report most mornings now. It's getting boring. We've got to stop doing that. All right. We are joined this morning by Bulelo. Bulelo Tinta, who you know well from the show. He's back. He's making a star appearance this morning. Cameo. Sia Sangweni's here. I'm here and you are here. That's most important. How you remember you, Bulelo? What's happening?
Well, Gareth, I'm not COVID.
Here we go.
You probably don't know that. And it's really important that everybody sort of knows that, because yes, it does make me better than everyone at the moment. So I don't really want to greet anybody or anything. I've got COVID. And
So we've been playing all your clips and some people think they're hilarious and some people are very upset because, you know, it's like you're making a mockery of this terrible, terrible thing that's the worst affliction that's ever happened to some people. The hypochondriacs especially, they think you're not taking this seriously enough, Bulelo.
You know, how dare you in 2021 make a joke
this is your
take the
truth.
Piss out of rich people? It's so true. And
it's your truth.
You know, it's deeply true. Thank you, Oprah. Thank you.
Yes,
you're so right.
Yes,
you and Oprah.
It's your truth. Yeah, right.
Like, people, stop taking yourself so seriously. Like, how dare you suggest that rich people are ridiculous?
Yeah.
And, you know? And nothing can be funny anymore. Don't you dare laugh.
And as you said, we are all in this together.
And I think that's what's changed everything, Gareth. You know, after COVID, it forced us all to slow down. And in my dad's second apartment, which I inherited, I've managed to actually find peace. And you know what? People in Alexander and Soweto, I understand what they're going through now.
Yeah, you know,
we're all suffering. And this hasn't happened in human history before.
What an asshole.
Did you ever in this whole process think, oh, wait a minute, what's happening? Should I be a little concerned? You were never worried.
Number one, tragedy is gold mine for someone who's prepared. I'm in the best shape I can be in, and I've got the best medical service in the world. So I am not worried at all. It doesn't even register in the top 10 of the most sick I've ever been. So I've been logical. I stay at home.
Yeah.
I eat good food anyway. I'm already a disciplined person. It's just a process. I'm sick. It'll end.
Did you definitely get it at Cliff Central like everyone else?
I mean, it's tough to say. I would say it's most likely because I'm not like out there living my best life. You know what I mean?
You're not visiting everybody you can at the moment.
Oh, Lord, no. No. I'm not visiting everybody I can at the best of times.
No,
so
that's
it's
true.
Really not now, no.
Well,
and how did you find out you were sick, by the way?
I went for a test. In fact, I went for two tests. When we were told on the Friday, I went for a test, and that took a little while. And then on the Monday, I came in not feeling so great, and I thought, you know what, let me go get another test in case Friday was too early to test. And both came back positive. So,
well,
gosh.
Dr. Adams says, Bulelo, keep speaking your truth. There we go.
Oh, yeah.
That's such a great thing. See, I can't believe, I know this is something Bulelo doesn't care about at all, but I can't believe you didn't bring up the birth of Harry and Meghan's new little girl yesterday. I thought it would be.
No, it wasn't.
I thought it would be top of your agenda.
Yeah, it was Monday.
Oh. What happened? You missed the opportunity.
You know what I even thought about? I had it on the five things, and then I thought, let me at least get Gareth to start his week off well. Let me take it off.
Shame. Well, I mean, the birth...
It was my public service. You.
Well, I mean, the birth of anyone's little kid is exciting news, and these two really, even though they keep saying they don't want any attention, they can't help themselves. I mean, they're hanging around with the biggest attention seekers in the world, so I suppose we've got to say, you know, congratulations, Meghan and Harry. What's the child's name again?
Lilibet. Lilibet. Oh, you're going to pronounce it. It's a nod to the Queen, Elizabeth. And then her second name is Diana, a nod to Princess Diana. Still don't, yeah, just like Archie Harrison. It's just, I'm going to have to warm up to it.
They're not very good at choosing very royal-sounding names, are they?
No, but Prince Harry's having his title taken down here, then, everywhere.
Oh, is he? Are they taking it all away from him? Oh, good.
There's some exhibition of Princess Diana's dresses in some museum.
Mm.
And they just mentioned Prince Harry. They've now taken his royal titles off. And wasn't the Madame Tussauds in London, I think perhaps it's the one in New York,
mm-hmm.
they've physically moved Harry and Meghan out of the royal family section. So, and they put them all in the Hollywood section. So all of this is happening very quick and swiftly.
So that's...
But I wanted to mention on Gareth, I was very surprised to walk in and find, I don't know in what sequence they are, but patients. Zero and patient one. There's a patient one and patient two. Mm-hmm. They're back at the booking today.
Oh, I thought they were only coming back tomorrow. Patient one and patient zero. Patient zero is Simpiwe, we've decided. Is she there now?
And she's back.
Is she there with you now?
Simpiwe, wherever she is.
I thought that was Barrett.
She's keeping her very safe distance from me.
Was it Barrett or was it her that was patient zero? I mean, I know that this is a kind of, it's almost like we're burning them as witches at the moment because, you know, you're not meant to talk about who started it. But I quite like the idea of some blame. I want to know who.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't you agree, Mbulelo? I mean, I think we should be naming and shaming the people who brought COVID into our reality and ruined our lives.
Let's hold them to account. Let me get her.
Yeah, no, it is important. It is important to know which one's the witch so you know where to put the stake.
Yes, correct. And burn them.
Yeah.
So I see you, obviously you've taken a bit of a break from running and things, but that must be for very frustrating for you because you were on a bit of a roll.
I am feeling sick about that. Not because of COVID. I feel absolutely sick that I can't actually, hey, at least my trainer still calls me in the morning at the correct time. He still wants me to get up on time, you know, 4:45. You still got to get up. No one cares that you got
really?
COVID.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And then what do you do? I mean, you can't very well be doing cardio when you've got any kind of respiratory anything. I mean, if you just got a cold, it's not good to do cardio.
No, I just get up and I read now. It's the thing about discipline is I want to keep my routine. I don't want to start crying about being sick. Like nobody cares that I'm sick. Look, get on with life.
There she is. There's the witch.
Oh, there's Simpiwe.
There she is.
Good morning, guys.
Is it you? Just spray sanitizer all over her. We can't take any chances.
Right there.
But dramatic.
Yeah. Good move, Mbulelo.
Okay. Shame on you.
Okay.
So, Simpiwe, are you patient zero? Did you bring it to the office, or was it you or Barrett? We're debating it at this stage.
Good.
You.
I'll take the blame. Trying to get some sympathy up in here. Is it working?
Well, you know, no sympathy. But are you all right? You didn't die of COVID. You're okay. You're back.
Yes. I wasn't as dramatic as Mbulelo. Gosh, I'm sure. So sorry what you're going through.
It's terrible.
It's just too much, you know?
COVID
you are
changed everything.
You're going through the most.
Yeah.
Okay.
COVID
I understand.
Everything.
We were definitely in it together, Chief. But I was pretty chilled. It just felt like a normal flu.
There we go.
So,
there we go. I think, you know, if in the old days before COVID came along, if people had made this much of a fuss about flu, we would have chased them out of the building. We would have gone, oh, what a bunch of hypochondriacs.
Yeah, what a soft
bitch. Yeah, but hasn't that flu killed more people? So, just to show that he's a bit dangerous, hey?
I don't know.
So now, Simpiwe, I always told you why I'll never go to the East Rand. Here is your example. Oh. Yeah, you brought your COVID from the East Rand to us civilized northern suburbs people, and here we are now. Here we stand.
Vilela, please stop with your privilege. It's not going to work right now.
You are a super spreader.
East Rand is gold, okay?
Yeah. You're a super spreader.
That's all I have to say.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're all right. And you and Khomolemo and Barrett are all getting back to work today, I think.
Yeah.
So right.
Things should be back to normal. And yeah.
Well, apparently the only one among our people who really did have it bad, despite Bulelo's protestations that he was a real victim here, was Jane. But apparently she's also on the mend. So all's well that ends well.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into some stuff here. Thanks, Simpiwe. I'm glad you're back and you're well. People with dogs. Can we just talk about that? You've got an issue with dogs. And listen, I love dogs, but I'm 100% on your side with this one. I think Sia will probably be as well. Why do people have to take their dogs with them when they go shopping? Is this a new...
I don't get it.
And also, I was under the impression that especially if it was a food shop, you're not allowed to take dogs in.
But I've always said this. There are three people that are the worst humans in the world. Yeah. Just, I don't know how long this lasts. Pet owners who think they're the second coming of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. People that have just had a baby.
Yes.
Think, you know how they think, oh my God, I've housed life and you just can't understand.
I'm the first person ever to produce a child, yeah.
And you'd never understand until you've had a baby.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And people that are sick. Like, mm-hmm. you know, these people of, oh, if you haven't had COVID, you just can't understand kind of, you know, mm-hmm. they are the worst people on earth. And because when you have a dog and when you have a baby, excuse me, I don't have to love your dog as much as you do. And no, I love dogs, but I don't have to love your baby and dog as much as you do.
Absolutely.
Leave it at home. Some people are allergic. Some people are scared of dogs. Some people mm-hmm. just don't like the presence of dogs around their avos.
Well, the fact is, like, I think there's a hygiene issue around dogs going into food shops. I think most food shops have a little sign outside that says no dogs. But I don't understand why it would be necessary for you to take the dog shopping with you. I mean, if the dog is with you and you need to just pop in quickly and buy something, then leave it in the car for 2 seconds. It's not going to die. Leave a window open a little bit, especially if it's hot and now in winter, you don't have to worry. Or else leave the dog at home. There is no reason for you to be traveling everywhere with it. I know people who take their dogs everywhere. Now, I occasionally take my dog when I have to drop it off somewhere. I have to take it to be, to be groomed, or I take it to a family to look after when I'm going away, or any of that stuff. But he doesn't travel with me all the time, and I think it's ridiculous to do that to an animal. They don't know what the hell's going on. They don't need to know what... what the inside of a shop looks like. They're never going to go there again. And if they do go there again, you're doing the wrong thing.
Mbulelo, what happened to you? Did you have one particular bad incident recently?
No. I love dogs. I hate the thought that because you love something, everyone else has to. I cannot stand it. I cannot stand this idea. And I'm talking about walking into Woolworths up the road the other day is what... triggered this off in me. Like, this lady walks in with her husky. I'm like, this woman here. And
that's not unnecessary.
Not even a little
pup. No, a husky. No,
a wolf. A wolf, yeah.
A wolf.
Yeah.
It would have eaten a small child if it was given a chance. Just prancing around Woolworths.
Well, something that I've also become more and more aware of, even though I'm a person who has no issue with dogs, I grew up with a lot of dogs, is that some people have this legitimate, genuine phobia when it comes to dogs.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of inconsiderate to bring your dog into public shared spaces when some people can have a mini freak out. Like, I remember we've had a handful of people who have properly had meltdowns here at Cliff Central because we've had some people bring dogs and people just can't deal with that.
Yeah, shame. I've also got on that note, it made me think of Casper De Vries, who was the last person at Cliff Central to really bring his dogs all the time. And Casper's very good friend, Charlene Surtee Richards, died yesterday. Sia and I only know Charlene through her, through Casper, rather. Even though we obviously knew about her from TV, who in South Africa doesn't know the face of Charlene Surtee Richards? And it's just worth mentioning that this woman has been around a very long time, and she's made an incredible impact on acting and on drama and on soap operas and on all kinds of shows in South Africa. She really was one of the most recognizable faces in the country. And she popped in at Cliff Central a couple of times because she was very good friends with Casper. And they would hang out. They would hang out on his show together. And she was very funny. She had a foul mouth, man. And she could. I mean, she was really like hilariously funny. And you know, by saying she has a foul mouth, from my point of view, that's not an insult. I don't. When people die, I don't go and try and sanctify their image as if they, you know, were a saint. Whatever Charlene was doing towards the end of her life, she was having a lot of fun. She was laughing. She was swearing. She was talking nonsense with Casper. They were moaning about other people in the industry. I like that. And she just died. She died very suddenly, 66 years old.
Whoa. I think that's...
She had a stroke or something, right?
I don't know. From the news outlets that I've been reading and listening to, she passed away in her sleep. And it seems like she was in some sort of a B&B or some, you know.
Yeah, she was in a guest house. Apparently they were busy filming some show and, you know, the cast all stay in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they stay in a guest house. So she wasn't even in her own home when she died. And you can, I mean, you can imagine what happened the morning that they, because apparently she died in her sleep on Sunday night or something. And then obviously Monday morning, someone went to wake her up and, you know, she was kind of non-responsive. Anyway, I just think...
I don't know when 66 isn't so... It's not old
in my
books anymore.
And no.
I think especially it's now that my dad is now 63, my mother's about to be 60, and going over that threshold, it's hitting me to think, oh, shucks, actually, you know, this is my mother's year's time and what could happen? And now you start to be a little aware of things like that.
Well, if you ever watched the film adaptation of the book Filasekind, you'll remember that was the first time I saw Charlene Surtee Richards, and she was absolutely extraordinary in that role. And, you know, we tend to think of her as a soap opera actress much later on, which, by the way, is harder than a lot of actors think it is, because if you want to successfully portray characters in soap operas, you can't be over the top and melodramatic, right? And she was very good at that. She brought some credibility to soap operas because she was so good at getting into the characters. But I remember her as Fila, and we used to have to, I think we read it as a set work in one of our high school years. And she just played it she played that role so beautifully. She was extraordinarily, you know, varied in her application of, you know, emotion and expression and all of that stuff. So I feel like we have lost someone who is extremely talented here. It's kind of, they're not in many actors who I would celebrate, but I think Charlene Surtee Richards is someone we could have been very proud of in South Africa.
And she was able to cross racial lines in South Africa in her career, which, you know, a few people have been able to do that. You know, some people know her from Igoli, some people know her from movies. I first came across her in Generations. So,
You know, she was
well loved and appealed to so many people on so many different levels. What a life.
Yeah.
Speaking of this, so recently I lost a friend of 30 years, and at the funeral, it was an interesting thing. And I felt like, wait, am I a bad person for this? But there are certain people who shouldn't get to speak at funerals.
Oh, God, who spoke?
People make funerals about themselves.
Oh, no. Who did this? I mean, that's just awful. Was it a relative?
Well, I mean, he's somebody I've known since, literally I was 6 years old.
No, but I mean, was he a relative of the deceased? Yeah. Don't make it about yourself.
It was his uncle. And it was, I think to myself, These are what are you doing right now? This is not about, we're not here to celebrate you. We're not here to mourn you.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Get off the stage.
But you know,
like I hope she has a dignified speaker and a eulogist.
Bulelo, that's such a, it's such an obvious pitfall of so many people, is that they do tend to have this inability to make anything about anything but themselves. And they don't even realize they're doing it. You know, someone will get up and they'll start talking about someone else. And before long, three quarters of what they said was about them and their relationship with that person. You're like, that's not what today's about, you know?
Yeah, also, it's kind of like when I got COVID.
Oh, you see, exactly. I found it a bit odd that ENCA, and we were there recording the show yesterday. I found it a bit odd that they decided that they needed to be on the scene as Charlene's body was taken out of the guest house and put in a hearse or whatever it was and driven away. I thought, like, you know, is that really, do we need to have a blow by blow every time anyone dies? They did this with King Goodwill's Relatini, which I understand. They did it with the Queen Regent, which I kind of understand too. Obviously, if it's a massive political figure, you kind of have a reason to cover that as news. But I thought, you know, isn't this a private thing?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this something that,
yeah,
that, why do they have to be on the scene watching as the coffin is carried out of the guest house? I mean, it's like, why is this on the news? Why are we getting a blow-by-blow account of this? You know, with Dan Mojani going, and here comes the coffin with Charlene's body in it, and we're going to load it in the back of the Mercedes. And I wouldn't watch it normally. I just saw it happening, and I thought, fuck, is this necessary? Like, I understand, even if, let's say maybe they covered her funeral, right? Maybe they cover her funeral, and there's some beautiful speeches, but they had, like, there was someone on a saxophone, and then you had the family, mm-hmm. and I just thought, surely this is a private moment. And as much as Charlene meant to so many people in this country, do we need to see this part of the whole process? Isn't it a bit macabre? Is it totally necessary? Am I wrong, or is it for ratings?
It's news. It's something that people have been talking about and are interested in the country. And also, though, you never know what will happen in situations like this. So even though they might not necessarily want to broadcast that whole moment, it's waiting for something.
What do you mean? Like, she could tumble out of the coffin? Or, I mean, what are they hoping for?
Exactly.
What are they hoping? What do you think it will happen? Oh, is that what it is?
If that happens, I capture it. If a family member starts crying or reveals something, they just have to be there. So, unfortunately, it's a little odd, but it's news. But to Mbulelo's point a little earlier about the funeral thing, of all ceremonies, I'm actually more sympathetic when it comes to funerals. Weddings, I think, okay, you can be long-winded in your speech, calm down, sit down, the person will still be around. A funeral, to me, you know, a mourning process is quite individual, and a person just has to do what they have to do. So I'm more understanding there. You know, the last funeral I went to a few weeks ago, there was, at least with no exaggeration, an awkward 3 or 4 minutes as one of my relatives stood up and was attempting to get her speech started. And every time she even uttered a syllable, she broke down in tears. And I will admit, there was a tiny part of me that was like, someone get her off stage then. But I thought, you know, that's what she needs to do. That's her outlet. And she eventually got herself together and, you know, she made it through. But yeah, I think people need to do whatever they have to do. Am I too kind with this?
Yes, far too kind. Yes, far too kind. It's the funeral is not about you. If you can't hold it together,
give the job to someone else.
Actually, should be done within the home.
Mm.
It's not the stage is not the place to come and mourn, because then it becomes quite performative or whatever.
Yes,
the pain is awful. It should be done in the sanctity of a home. And there, I have no problem if it goes on for 6 weeks. And in Xhosa tradition, by the way, if there's anybody who takes it way too far with the mourning and blah, blah, blah. It's the courses. As with everything, we take things way too far. Mourn at home.
Yeah.
When it comes to the ceremony, it's about celebrating and the dignity of the person we are seeing over to the other side. It is not about you. It is absolutely zero about you.
Bolelo, that it is not about you is probably the most useful line some of us will ever learn in our lives. And some people never learn it, unfortunately. But everyone sees every other person's life as just a series of opportunities that they can take advantage of for attention. There are people like that. There are genuinely people like that who everything that happens in the world is actually just a chance for them to make it about them. Really. And they're not even conscious of it. It's not as if they sit there and they script themselves a role in your life. It's more like they can't help it. Subconsciously, that's the only setting that they know to do because no one's ever said to them, hey, this isn't your moment. Get back in line. Anyway.
And it's almost, well said. Just to finish off, it's almost like you have to, now when you're at the funeral, you have to be as deeply sad and as emotional as everyone else around, or you're a bad person. Like,
yes, but you,
I'm still broken about losing this person.
You said the word just now, and it's performative. Like, unfortunately, that's also become the normal default setting for people who think, you know, in order to be perceived as a good person or to be seen as being the best kind of good person, you have to put on the biggest show of all. And and that's what people do. You know, it's like, for example, I've been to live shows where there's an artist singing. This even used to happen on Idols. And for some people in the audience, it was more important that they made a huge big noise or that they jumped up and down or that they had a performative moment for themselves than it was about their appreciation of that other person who was singing. It's them. It's me, 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 me.
And you know what? And I guess I'd want to ask both of you this because it is something that I've been thinking about for a very long time in my life is for me, when I see these types of things is what it tells me, because at the center of my life is discipline, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lack of emotional discipline in that. Mm-hmm. And I view discipline across the board.
Very well
put. And I say to myself, I think it deeply offends the core tenet of my life, which is discipline.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody just lets it go like that, it's like you're showing me that you are incapable of any sort of pressure in your life because this is a difficult situation for everybody.
Yeah.
Get it together.
Right.
Especially for me, what offended me is you must know that I've known this uncle my entire life. I mean, like I said, I've known this guy. We were friends for 30 years. And to see him just unraveling like this, where's your discipline as an elder?
Well, you know, the person who in a difficult situation has their shoulders back and they're standing up straight and they've got a sense of calm about them, that's the person everyone wants to be around, actually, when things get tough. They don't want to be around the one who's falling apart and thrashing and wailing and gnashing their teeth. Oh, you think you disagree?
I'm still reeling off of how unpopular my comments were last week about the trolley and waiting and, you know, how compassionate we should be in shopping centers. And here I am again. I disagree. I think it is all about yourself. We're living in this world. Every single day you have not been eaten by our ancestors, you know, eaten by dinosaurs. Today, if we have not been in a car accident, welcome to cancer, if we have or tripped and died or choked on a peanut. That is enough to celebrate the fact that we are still standing. It is all about
right.
you. You should make it about you.
I don't know. I mean, like, Bolelo and I are likely to be the ones looking at you askance when you behave like that. That's all we're going to say. We are judging.
What's that guy's name?
We are judging.
That super dramatic, no matriquency, the guy who turned his family funeral into a farce.
Prince Harry.
The guy had not a Prince Harry. Oh my gosh, Prince Harry!
All right, I want to go to some comments here quickly. Tracy said about Charlene Surtee Richards, she is a national treasure, one of a kind. Her role in Felicicant, that simply was magnificent. So sad that she's gone. So many owe their careers to her influence. I think it was Venetia said she was from Uppington in the Northern Cape. So some good did come from the Northern Cape. Okay, I didn't know that either. And here's an interesting story about Charlize Theron. I mean, Charlize Theron. Charlene Surtee Richards. And this is from John. He says, I met Mrs. Richards at a rave in the 90s once, and she was wearing a black lace lingerie corset type thing. Very confident woman. Ooh. I can believe it. Like, you could see Charlene Surtee Richards was hugely confident, right? And she was quite a big woman, but she had such, like, personality. And I could see her wearing, like, outrageous outfits like that and not giving a shit what other people thought. She was like that. I love that about her. And then Errol says, I can't see all of you. I can hear you, though. Well, Errol, that's your problem. I don't know how to help you sort that out.
Yeah, that's...
And then this is a pretty bizarre story, because we were talking about people who take their pets when they go shopping, which is just so weird. Such a strange thing to do. Natalie says, I once saw a woman with a cat on a leash in a very busy shopping center. The cat looked absolutely terrified. I wish I could have the woman arrested for stupidity. First of all, can cats even go on a leash? I don't even know. Is that a thing?
I don't know. Cats are dreadful. Cats are absolutely dreadful.
Yeah. No, I'm not a big fan of cats.
They shouldn't be anywhere. Yeah. Save the owls. I've always said to people, save the owls. They eat cats. Cats are absolutely dreadful.
Yeah.
Absolutely
dreadful. Listen, we've got to get to headlines. We've got JJ Cornish joining us just now, and we're already running late. And he's going to give us an update, obviously, on Africanalysis, which is where we get to come to grips with all the things happening on our own continent, something which is horribly underrepresented in the news. Robben Island Museum's independent probe dismisses mismanagement claims. This is the latest from EWN this morning. One adverse finding and two disciplinary hearings. That's the outcome of an independent probe into the allegations of mismanagement at Robben Island. Last year, the state attorney appointed McRobert attorneys to assess and investigate 22 allegations and provide the museum council with legal advice. Apparently, two officials are in a situation where there's a prima facie case for disciplinary action against them. However, he said to, this is the chairperson, Kensani Maluleke, said to protect the integrity of the process, no further information could be shared at this stage. Either way, it's very, very sad, because you know how much Robben Island means to South Africa and how much a part of our history it is, what an important location it is of historical significance. And at the center of a very ugly debacle is Health Minister Zweli Mkhize, who on Monday denied reports that he had held meetings with various ANC political leaders over the digital vibes matter, or that he blamed President Cyril Ramaphosa for trying to oust any potential ANC contenders with the investigation. The minister wishes to clarify he does not believe that this investigation has anything to do with ANC politics, or as referred to in the article, 2022. Mkhize said that through a Department of Health statement on Monday night, at no point has the minister blamed the president for the investigation. I mean, it's just, how can it be about politics? Dude, you gave money to a relative through this company, Digital Vibes. This is nobody's fault but your own, right? Does anyone have sympathy for him?
Should have stuck to medicine, Paul.
Yeah,
should have stuck to medicine.
And even there, I mean, remember, this is the guy who was ANC's treasurer general for a long time. That means he was the guy who was making sure that the ANC was spending its money in the right places and fundraising from the right places. So, I mean, this tells you a lot about the ANC, doesn't it? These politicians.
Very well-informed, educated, and equipped people who are equally qualified to handle two different portfolios on either end of the spectrum. Yep. That's what it tells you about the ANC, right?
It does. And this is what CADA deployment has brought us to. Anyway, taking our news further afield, I can't believe that this is still going on, but UN judges will rule on Tuesday on Bosnian Serb military chief Ratko Mladic's appeal against his genocide conviction for the 1995 Srebrenica massacre, which was Europe's worst act of bloodshed since World War II. The Hague Tribunal will be delivering its final verdict on the so-called Butcher of Bosnia, who was sentenced to life imprisonment in 2017 for genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity during the 1992 to 1995 Bosnian War. It's taken this long for us to get any kind of justice. 2017, he was finally sentenced. And now he's appealing that. He says he's not guilty. He says he's frail. He's in his late 70s, still prone to courtroom outbursts against NATO and the West. He's expected to be in the dock to hear the judgment today at 1 o'clock. Mothers of some of the 8,000 mostly Muslim men and boys who were killed when Bosnian Serb troops overran Srebrenica will meanwhile be outside the court in the Netherlands, where they have long campaigned for justice. We will go to The Hague to look the executioner in the eye once again as he is finally sentenced. Munira Subasic, who is the president of one of the Mothers of Srebrenica, told AFP. So this guy, Ratko Mladic, is appealing, and he's still grumpy as hell, even though he's well into his 70s and frail. He's standing up for himself. He says he's got nothing to apologize for, and he wants to appeal this finding. Why should you send me to jail for killing thousands of people? It's amazing, huh? I mean, like, it makes you wonder if you could take some of the worst people in history and put them in front of the Hague and say to them, you know, account for yourself. They'd probably still, you know, Hitler would have a tirade, and Mussolini and Stalin. Now, these guys wouldn't suddenly go, oh, you know, now that you bring it up, actually, I feel kind of bad about those things I did. You know, maybe I wasn't the best person, and maybe I should be slightly embarrassed by what I. They wouldn't. They'd be like, they wouldn't stop. Those people never.
They would sound like ANC comrades, and probably. You know what? We need to start. We need to start including the ANC regime with Mussolini and Hitler and people. No. And I'm being dead serious. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. They have condemned millions of South Africans, if not to death, to the brink of starvation.
Yeah, generationally, I mean, there are young South Africans growing up now who have no hope of ever having employment, ever being more than one step away from starving and hungry and cold and desperate. And maybe you make a good point, but I think, you know, Mussolini versus the ANC, I still think there's a good argument to be made that Mussolini is a lot worse.
Trillions of rands have been looted,
yes,
which have put babies, women, and children in this country on the brink of death. It is no different.
No, you're not
from
wrong.
These revolted people we speak of. It's just more slimy because they do it in Italian suits.
Yeah.
So it's that's all. That's the only difference. Mussolini did it with a gun. These slime balls do it in Italian suits and through the back door. These ANC cadres, they are no different. Right. Yeah. And we need to be open about that.
All right, stop with your political platform here, because you see, Bees Rockstar Gaming says, Mbulelo, run for office. You see, this always happens when you get on your soapbox.
I can't because I've got COVID right now.
All right. Poor you. Just quickly, I want to get to JJ, but this is an important story. Police, international law enforcement, have revealed that a vast three-year global operation to infiltrate encrypted phones with violent criminal groups has resulted in hundreds of arrests worldwide, unraveling the world's most sophisticated sting. Agencies from Australia, Europe, New Zealand, and the United States said they operated and supposedly managed to get information from secure phones. Dubbed Operation Trojan Shield, forces in 16 countries monitored as members of the Mafia, Asian crime syndicates, and outlaw motorcycle gangs discuss things like drug deals, money laundering, and even gangland hits. How's that?
Wow.
Pretty wild, huh?
Wow.
So a massive massive operation to uncover organized crime. I thought that would be an interesting story to go to. Now, let's turn our attention to JJ Cornish, who, of course, is our man on the ground when it comes to understanding and making sense of all the things that are going on in Africa, and he joins us now. JJ Cornish is here for Africa Analysis, our bi-monthly feature, which is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. And we're looking at all the things going on in Africa. JJ, bonjour. How are you?
Bonjour. I'm immensely well, thanks. Very kind of you to ask, though, nonetheless. I mean, it's not about me, but I appreciate your asking. And I wanted you to know, I haven't managed to break or crack the black net yet, but I do funerals.
Oh, you do? Well, you know what? I think you would. You'd be a better speaker at most funerals than some of the relatives that we were talking about earlier.
I pitched up at a friend's funeral in the days, you know, when I was still in the running club, mm-hmm. and they said, "Would you mind doing the eulogy?"
Ooh.
I mean, I'm sitting down waiting to weep along with my friends. I said, what do you mean? And he'd lived a complex life. He'd had a couple of wives. How many of them were there? What could I say? I didn't know more about him than we'd run together and had a few drinks together. So while everybody was singing, the church is one foundation, I was writing, seriously trying to write notes. Happily, I didn't do a bad job. But I've seriously done funerals, and the trick when you're going to do a eulogy is scripted. Know what you're going to say.
Yes.
And then take a long walk and say it, and you burst out in tears. Well, start again and walk and walk and walk until you can say it without bursting into tears. Funerals are not about not so much about the person who's died as about the people who are mourning them. So it is a show, there is a bit of theater.
No, you make a good point.
Do it properly.
So let me ask you, while we're on the topic of funerals, and this wasn't really on the agenda for today, but we spoke the other day and we were all absolutely engrossed in the story that emerged from Zimbabwe, which I'm sure you've heard of, about this mystical scepter that was buried with Bob Mugabe, and now how Mnangagwa wants to have him dug up so that he can get the scepter back and obtain proper control of Zimbabwe. Do you think that there's anything more to this that we may have missed? Have you been following the story? Do you care about it? Or do you think it's another one of those ridiculous stories that comes out of Zim?
No, I've used it many times. The fact is, Grace Mugabe, who's of course in Singapore.
You've used the scepter?
Unlikely. She's been fined a couple of cattle and a goat for incorrectly burying her husband in the village, opposed to on Heroes Acre.
That's
Robert Mugabe said, Grace, whatever you do, don't bury me on Heroes Acre.
That's
because that Mnangagwa guy, he wants my body parts to use, for rituals. I didn't know about a scepter. And when you think about Robert Mugabe's body parts and a scepter, it could make you smile, Riley. But nonetheless, that when he was buried, they filled his grave with concrete.
Yes.
So they're going to have a dickens of a job. We're talking jackhammers and not the rock group Jackhammer either, getting him out of that grave.
Unbelievable.
It'll be a colorful time, colorful time.
All right, so let's turn our attention to the important stuff. The Pan-African Parliament, this was a hugely embarrassing situation that erupted there last week, and we spoke about it to some degree. We spoke about Julius Malema losing his mind and going and threatening to kill someone outside. But what are the people at the Pan-African Congress actually fighting about, the Pan-African Parliament, rather? What are they fighting about? What's the actual – what's the trouble? What's the beef?
Well, to use your beef analogy and allow my pun, things are going from bad to worse at the pub, The thing is, the Pan-African Parliament, they are fighting about what they're fighting about in the African Union itself. And that is, and it's very uncool to talk about it, the battle between Francophone and Anglophones, and also the battle between the regions. Now, you have a big continent. It's no more united than, any derby football match, saying that the two fans being in the stadium are united. Not at all. We have north, south, east, west, and central.
Yes.
And as it happens, the west is largely Francophone. And the leadership or the presidency of the African Pan-African Parliament, which was established in 2003, has really resided in the west and the center, which is Francophone. Now, the African National Congress, Kulemabe, is saying that's enough of that. And they've tested it, legally tested it, and it's been told that it's wrong. The principle of geographic rotation and the principle of rotational leadership must apply. And really, it's Southern Africa's turn. Southern Africa, the southern region, has not had a fair crack of the whip at the African Union. When Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma became president of the African Union Council, she didn't really get a fair crack at all, and she had one term and was out. So Southern Africans and East Africans, largely Anglophone, have had enough of this, and they want to get a look in.
Right.
And essentially the Moroccans, who are my old friends, you know, the Moroccans, who are trying to buy as many friends as they can and to establish themselves, have supported a Malian woman, Hydra Aichata Sise, and you know, they put a jet at her disposal. That jet, I think, is at ORT as we speak.
Wow.
The fact is,
wow.
Mali having had a coup is suspended. So Hydra can't do it, but nevertheless, she's still trying. And, you know, that's the problem. The thing is, you know, when you have hotheads like our Juju, shaking his fist and threatening to kill people,
yeah.
there are people of the same ilk. Now, the Pan-African Parliament is comprised of 5 members from each of the countries that have ratified the treaty. And those 5 members have to have at least 1 woman, and they should reflect the disparity or the political picture, the political map of the country. So we have opposition members and so on.
Okay.
But it's the thing about the Pan-African Parliament is, Gareth, as we sit now, it's a talk shop.
Yeah.
Right, it's supposed to have oversight of the budget of the African Union, supposed to have a sort of a watching role on what is happening there. Not at all. The African leaders, many of whom won't have any truck with their own parliaments, are not going to have any tolerance for a continental legislature. They have to fund it. But they have limited its powers, and every time the African Union Parliament or the PAP says we need to get extra powers, we want to become a continental legislature, the European Parliament took 20 years to become that, it will happen for us. Well, nothing happens. The African Union leaders stop. They pull the reins.
Of course, I mean, it's a bold idea, and it's something which is probably in the legacy of Obasanjo and Mbeki more than anything else. But it's highly unlikely that this body will ever really amount to anything, because sovereignty becomes the issue. And we know that African leaders, and particularly the executive leaders of each of these countries, are highly unlikely to hand over any of that power to some continental legislature. And furthermore, can you just remind us why the PAP is here in South Africa? Why do we have to host this ridiculous body? JJ? See, have we lost him?
Hold on.
Sorry.
Got me now.
Okay, yeah. Why are they here in South Africa again? I've forgotten why.
Okay. 2002, we have the inaugural summit of the African Union. We don't want to be the heavy boots coming in, you know, the former apartheid regime, now the ANC government, take over everything. So the bank, the more important organs of the African Union, we don't even try for them. We don't even put up anybody for the presidency. We don't put up anybody for the executive.
Right.
But we had Frenny Ginwala, who was our speaker at the time.
I remember.
And she pushed Nelson Mandela very hard to get the Thabo Mbeki, very hard to get the Pan-African Parliament, which you got. It currently costs us 438 million rand a year. And that's going to decrease to 275 million. The rest of it is paid from the African Union. It has its headquarters at Midrand, at Gallagher Estates in Midrand. And that's it. We talk. Gareth, I have many, many times been the only journalist there. I go along because I think I sort of owe it. If I'm really serious about Africa, I should be doing this.
Absolutely.
But I'm the only journalist. And they say, well, we can't have a press conference for only one journalist. Would you like to interview the speaker? So I get sort of exclusive interviews with the speakers, and that works very well. But, you know, I went one day expecting a nice knockdown, drag-out debate on Zimbabwe, and they just didn't hold it. Robert Mugabe let them know, no, you're not going to debate Zimbabwe. What's your business? And so that sort of thing happens again and again. And you sit there and you think to myself, who on earth is going to take this story? You know,
what is
they do
it?
Have Rak-
What does it cost? I mean, you know, these things are not cheap to run. And we know politicians, you just mentioned private jets at the disposal of this one or that one. Clearly, these people have to be flown in from various places. They have to all be accommodated somewhere. They have to be fed and clothed and God knows what else. And this is usually at the expense of their people. I mean, it's just, it's a bit ridiculous, really. It's almost a bit of pageantry for no good reason, right?
At the moment, it is. Until it performs a proper role, a proper legislative and oversight role, it is. It's simply a talk show, and a very expensive one at that, because all the members get allowances when they get here and so on. It's like the rest of the African Union again. The bulk of the money comes from a very few of the members, and some of them pay nothing at all. South Africa, Angola, and Nigeria are the biggest contributors to Parliament, and at the moment, you know, we've had five, in fact, with the acting chief Chirumba from Zimbabwe, and those countries have had not a look in at the bureau and at the presidency. So no wonder they're angry about it. So it is expensive. I think it's about 7 billion rand a year, and the African Union, as they picks up most of that, and South Africa's contribution, as I said, approaching $500 million. It's dropping down to a sort of just over a quarter of a billion. So good, we're not paying that much. You know, and it's one of those things that people say, and I take the view, for example, I'm a multilateralist. Mm. They take the view with United Nations, and you've said this before. What are they doing? And fighting. So you have it. But in the case of the African Union, not only are they only talking, but they're just about being told what they can or may talk about. Well, what's the use of that?
What's going to happen to Julius Malema after he said he wanted to kill one of the other members of the African Parliament, the Pan-African Parliament? Is there going to be any follow-up on that, or is that just the kind of thing that happens at the PAP? Is this just something we must carry on with and shirk off and move on?
I haven't heard of any. The session will resume in around October. I haven't heard of any disciplinary action being prepared. And there was a Senegalese member called War who kicked the speaker, the ANC chief whip, a woman. And of course, the ANC Women's League got on about the gender-based violence, and they threatened and they... She threatened to lay charges, and he tearfully came and apologized to her, and she accepted that. So that bit has been covered. But as for, I think Julius Malema was arguing that he had been threatened with death, and that is why he threatened, you know, equal or a proportional response, as you would call it. But I haven't heard of disciplinary measures being taken against him.
Yeah, these are not serious people, but thank you for trying to explain it to us. And I hope that that if anyone's passing by Gallagher Estate and hears a huge racket and ruckus, that they'll pop in and at least offer you some biscuits if you're covering it, because there's no one else here who's going to look after you. Thank you so much, JJ. Good to speak to you as always, and we'll chat to you in a couple of days' time.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. JJ Cornish, and a look at Africanalysis this morning, where, I mean, I forgot that, you know, these countries have to pay for all of this. And there's another just outrageous waste of money. And I can't help thinking that this is the EU's fault, because the EU, well, because they're the ones who are trying to make what hasn't worked for Europe work in other places. You know, the European Union is a disaster. It's more bureaucracy. It's more people on the public ticket. It's Brussels, which has turned into this massive operation of bureaucracy. And it doesn't achieve anything like it once did. And countries are looking at the situation in the EU, and they're thinking, well, what do we really get out of this? Where's the benefit? And who are the beneficiaries other than politicians? And maybe that's true here in Africa as well. So why copy a bad system like that? Why try and institute something really, really stupid like an African Union, which is toothless, pointless, nobody takes it seriously, costs an enormous amount of money? All we're really doing is creating jobs for other politicians, and not just from our own country, but from all over the world. I think we should shut it down, liquidate it, and take whatever money we would have spent on that and put it into making people's lives better on every front in this continent and in every country. Why waste this on politicians, the lowest of the low. Don't you agree?
Scum, the lot of them. There is not a single politician who is not. Why don't people presume politicians are scum from the beginning? Just presume. We shouldn't work from you deserve to be respected. Is you are scum? Prove me wrong over the next 5 years. Thank you very much.
Because they know how they swindle people, and they have very silky soft tongues, and they know how to kiss babies and woo crowds. And
hey, listen, before we go to the break for the next hour, because we've got quite a lot to do today, I just wanted to quickly give you your one thing for the week. You know, every week we give you a little task to do, and sometimes they're really easy, sometimes they're a little bit more difficult. So for this week, you're going to discover and sue over a historical grievance. So I want you to go back in history, find one of many different kinds of historical grievances, and find someone to sue. These days, you know, it's perfectly acceptable to sue for damages that were done to your ancestors. Indeed, if you aren't rich because at some point in history others dispossessed your family or somehow deprived them of their rightful share of the earth, you must find the descendants of the people responsible and serve them with an inflation-adjusted claim for damages. You're going to do this today. I don't know how, but you're going to try. Okay, so here are a couple of ideas. If Attila the Hun slaughtered some family livestock all those years ago, Attila the Hun a fair amount of time ago, but if Attila the Hun slaughtered some of your family livestock back in the year 600 AD, then I'd like you to sue for, let's say, you know, 108 million pounds. That would be about right, you know, with inflation, with adjustments for inflation, obviously. If the ancestors of Bill Gates clubbed your ancestors to death in 104 BC, then I think you could sue him for $783 million or something like that. Sounds right to me.
Half of that would be right, because currently there's a woman who's trying to get half of it.
Yes, absolutely. Also, if you have a land, if there was a landowner back in time who sexually harassed your great grandmother while she was his servant, I think you could sue for that. That's probably, you know, about 900,000 in rands if you sue now. Maybe you could do that back in 1902. It happened, you know, especially if you are of mixed race origin and you suspect that it was white privilege that made him abuse her, then you could say, I'll have some money there. Maybe the Romans built a road over your property years and years ago in, I don't know, 34 BC. Then you could sue for
Or kill the 33-year-old who you all loved.
Yes.
The Romans have done that as well.
Good point. So I think
he was 33. It was a whole thing. It's in a book. It's a two-part thriller.
Absolutely. If the Lord of the Manor stole 8 bushels of hay from your family back in the day, then it's time to sue for that as well. Maybe if you didn't get the dowry for your eldest daughter that was never paid back in 1769, it is time now. You know, the ukotwala was never delivered properly. So now is the time. Everybody is going to find a reason to sue for some historical grievance today. All right. There we go. There's your task for the week. How do you like that?
I don't know if I'm game for that. I don't know.
Fantastic.
History will provide you with many grievances. Even if you make them up, it's fine. Just find someone to sue, and you never know. Your chances are about 1 in a billion, but let's try anyway. What the hell?
Look, this is not the week to do so, because I've been putting it off for a while, and I'm finally watching this series that has great reviews. It's called The Underground Railroad, and it's about slavery.
That's right.
I'm thinking this is not the time for me to recount what has been done to my ancestors.
I'll give this a skip.
Thank you very much.
See, there is never a bad time for bringing up a historical grievance. Never. It's always a good time.
Let me ring up Mr. Harriet Tubman.
You are the son of a pastor. You are the son of a man of the church. The Christians have never stopped telling me about how Jesus was persecuted. So
yes.
There's never a bad time to go back and just bring it all up again. Do you know what? If I find Pontius Pilate's descendants, they have no clue what is coming for them.
Or Judas's descendants. Yes, sis. Imagine poor Judas's descendants. Oh, my God. I mean, like the descendants
of Iscariot.
Yes, sis. Because those, how many pieces of silver? 20 pieces of silver or whatever. Imagine what that's worth today.
Oh, What are we getting ourselves into?
Let's go, people. Today is the day that you set things right historically. All right, we'll be back in a minute or two. We've got Mbolelo Tinta here with us. We've got JJ Cornish, who's just given us African analysis. We've got Blind History on the way, speaking of historical grievances, and a whole lot more. Stick around. CliffCentral.com.